Hello and welcome to Illinois Realtors Podcast. I'm John Broadbooks, Vice President for Communications at Illinois Realtors, and today we are podcasting from one of the association's biggest events. That's right, we're recording this from the Spring Conference and Expo, which provides our members with great keynote speakers and continuing education. Now, Southern Illinois is home to Scott Air Force Base, and with that military presence, there's more than $4 billion, $4 billion annually in local impact. And that means there are also 13,000 people directly connected to work at the base, which serves really as the headquarters for the U.S. Transportation Command and numerous other air units. With this base's growing presence in the Metro East, there's a need for realtors who specialize in serving the needs of the servicemen and women and their families, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Joining me are Angie Zahn, managing broker with Strano & Associates in New Baden. And in addition to being a former Realtor of the Year for her local association, she's also a former chair of the working group which plans and executes this expo. And we have Steve Ellerbrake. He is with Ellerbrake Group with RE/MAX Preferred of O'Fallon and has about 35 years of experience in the business. So welcome, Angie and Steve.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Great. So Scott Air Force Base, as I mentioned, has seen its presence steadily grow over the years. And in fact, recently they've been adding more jobs there. With all that growth comes the need for families to move here, and sometimes these moves are pretty quick. You know, the military tells you to go, you have to go. And so, Angie, before we begin, I know you sort of bring a unique perspective to this because you have some personal connections to the military. You are the parent of a military veteran, the daughter of a veteran, and the wife of a veteran.
That's true. My dad was World War II, my husband was a Vietnam veteran, and my son and my daughter-in-law both served multiple tours to Iraq and Afghanistan. So I've seen firsthand what multiple deployments and multiple moves can do to families who also sacrifice and give their service.
So talk about how these connections really sort of shaped your passion for being able to help military families. I mean, this is personal for you in many ways.
It is personal. You know, we don't really think about it, particularly in relationship to the families, that they are separated quite often with deployments, and they may be making decisions across country and across continents about a move. And so part of our position as a realtor is really to make that stress free for them and to cover as many bases as we can.
So if you sign up for the military, part of the deal is that you could end up just about anywhere, often without a lot of notice. And so, Steve, I guess what's the best piece of advice you can provide for families who would find themselves in this situation? Because I know you're confronted with this often.
Yeah, I mean, we're right at Skye Air Force Base, and a lot of our transactions involve military families. So I'd say align yourself with a realtor who carries the Military Relocation Professional, or MRP, designation.
And we're going to talk about that in just a minute, yes.
That's probably the number one recommendation I would have. And, you know, when a military family relocates, it can really benefit from the services of a real estate professional who understands their special situation with regard to the timing of the move. A lot of the logistics are specific to a military relocation, and that professional can help that family move easier, faster, and make the whole deal less stressful for sure.
Because I would imagine, I mean, you know, the Air Force has bases all over the world. I mean, you're talking about people who are moving potentially from overseas, who are moving back to the States, correct, Steve?
Absolutely. I mean, we're a worldwide military, so we have people coming from all over the world, and they're coming from different time zones. It may be just one spouse coming first. It may be people coming into town to try to find a home in quick order, and then moving a family who hasn't seen the home later. Could be somebody who needs to move right away, who needs to sell here, and all of those things are tough when you're in the military.
Both of you hold the MRP designation. What is MRP? What does it stand for? And how did obtaining it help you be able to serve these families? And I'm gonna start with you on that, Angie.
Well, the military certification, it's an MRP. It's a certification by the National Association of Realtors. And it stands for Military Relocation Professional. And it provides a framework and a forum that strengthens our position as realtors to be an ally for the service member during their transition, whether they're buying or selling. There's resources and webinars that are available to MRPs that they can access, or we can access, that keep us up to date with issues facing our veteran and their moves. We help active service members relocate, and keep in mind that Scott is a joint use airport, so we really get members from all branches of service out here. Well, our training for the MRP reminds us that the veteran will depend on us for not only their housing needs, but to provide resources maybe outside of the base once they are here. The MRP designation reminds us that there's a military culture that often directs how we respond to their needs and how we communicate with them. The designation also reminds us to stay up to date on VA financing, what resources are available to our veterans and service members, what their eligibility requirements are. And I think with Illinois, it's pretty unique that we have recognized that our disabled veterans, we recognize them with a tax credit if they have certain levels of disability. So that's a nice way for the Illinoisans to say thank you to our service members.
Is there a certain season, Steve, where people seem to transfer in more, or is it just like throughout the year? You just really never know.
We see transfers all the time, but there are times of the year when they're more prevalent. Springtime, a lot of times it hinges on school year, so people like moving. And I think the military actually plans some of the transfers where it does sort of correspond with a natural transition time for people. Other times, not much. If there's a deployment for a particular military exercise or a military campaign, then can definitely be any time.
So when you're working with these families, how would working on a transaction with a military relocation be different than, say, working with somebody who's not in the military? Angie, I'll start with you.
Well, I think part of it is financing a little bit and understanding the type of home that might be eligible for VA financing for our buyers. We need to make sure that the home is basically move-in ready because the VA really doesn't approve most homes if they need quite a bit of work. So they're trying to get the veteran into the homes that really are ready for them to move into. So that's important to know when you start looking at homes with our service members. They don't always understand that.
And that's important for a seller, too. If they wanted to market to this, they need to make sure that everything's updated and handled before they even put it on the market.
And that's true. And that is a good marketing piece in our area, I think, when we start talking about who our buyers are, because we do serve the Scott Air Force Base and surrounding areas. All of our communities have service members who live in them. So that's a conversation we need to have with our sellers all the time up front.
Steve, what do you see are the main differences?
Well, a lot of the complexities of a corporate move and a military relocation are the same. Just moving in general is one of the toughest things people have to deal with. But the speed at which they have to move is sometimes faster than a corporate move. They don't have the flexibility that they might have with a corporate move. There are some similarities in terms of they have packers, they have movers, they have some of the costs covered. But when it comes to utilizing VA financing, for example, there are all kinds of differences that the military folks may not know about and sellers in a military community may not be aware of. So I know there are specific things like life safety issues that the military appraisal or the VA appraisal process will cover that a standard conventional mortgage appraisal process wouldn't, such as dry basements and crawl spaces. Those are things that may not come up in a normal appraisal that definitely apply when you're talking about selling in a VA financed situation. And a lot of our military folks use VA financing.
So it sounds like there's just a lot of little check boxes that you have to make sure are checked in order to make a transaction like this a successful one.
Absolutely. I mean, for us, we have two military spouses in my office. One of my buyer's agents is a Navy veteran, and having that experience in our working environment really helps our clients because there are so many unique complexities, and it's a moving target also. Things change all the time, and I think really being in a military community, it's really important to understand those ins and outs, the ups and downs, and the particulars that are involved. And the MRP certification, the training that goes along with that, really helps to sharpen your focus on those finer points, I'd say.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Angie, I would think, I mean, in addition to just the transactional process, you know, you're coming in, there's also got to be a whole lot of information that a realtor provides about everything from schools to, you know, different options of where you might live, what the area is like to live in. That's got to be, you know, pretty time-consuming sometimes. Necessary, I would think, right?
As realtors, we need to be knowledgeable about not only the homes we sell and the financing that's available to our service members, but we need to be cognizant about what their requirements are going to be when they get here. If they, we always ask about schools, and quite often they've checked out the O'Fallon area, where Scott Air Force Base Shiloh, where it's located, and they're familiar with the different school districts. They'd like to know if they have a special needs child, we can direct them to some of those resources. If they would like to know about some of the services outside of the base, then those are things that we always need to be able to provide to them, because we are the expert in our area. It's important to know our neighborhood.
And, you know, that's an interesting point when you're working with any realtor, but particularly in this case where you have somebody who has the MRP designation. I mean, being able to answer those questions is such a lifesaver for these families, I would think. Because you're, I mean, it's got to be a bewildering experience. It must be a bewildering experience to just suddenly go from one end of the country, perhaps, and just suddenly find yourself in O'Fallon or right near Scott Air Force Base, and you're trying to figure out, where do I need to live? What do I need to do? What services are available?
Well, there are so many variables. My wife's a military brat, and I met her when her father was stationed here at Scott Air Force Base. And she never stayed anywhere for more than 2 or 3 years, changed schools numerous times. And so there are so many implications that come along with moving if you're a military family that maybe aren't as poignant when you're just making a move, because it's so repetitious and there's so many moves that you make as a military family. There are all kinds of repercussions just in terms of your family sanity. And so I think when you're in a community like this, that having the MRP designation, that training really helps sharpen the focus on how we can best serve those military families.
So, you know, we've talked a lot about people moving in, but I mean, there's also the other part of it where they're transferring out. Talk to me about the dynamic on that end, because that's obviously different.
Well, I would say there are a lot of situations where a military family needs to go. They haven't been able to sell their home yet. They have to rent. And then 3 years later, they're still deployed or in a different duty station. And then they try to sell. So there are a lot of factors, and mainly they're timing factors where they just don't have a lot of choice. They've got to go. So it's really important to have somebody that can help you with that whole process. And if you're selling, you're likely going to be selling to a clientele that involves military buyers as well. So it is a dual-edged sword for sure.
Well, what's nice about the MRP is that we can also refer our clients as they're traveling across country to other MRP designees. So we're hand-holding our client and giving them the same experience and same opportunity with someone who has the same type of designation and responsibilities that we do.
Yeah, I would think for somebody who's having to move around, as you point out, Steve and Angie, every couple of years, you know, being able to have a network that could help you feel more comfortable is just critically important. I mean, especially if you have a family.
Well, and quite often we don't think about it, but you may have someone who's deployed, but the family's not with them, and the family's on another continent, and all of a sudden they have to come together in your backyard. So we really have to juggle a lot of hats and a lot of balls and make sure that we can make all those pieces work for them.
Well, Steve and Angie, thank you so much for stopping by the conference and expo today to talk with us about what's a really important aspect of the real estate business and area, and probably one that a lot of people don't really think about a lot. But Scott Air Force Base is really a massive Air Force Base here, and they've added quite a bit to it. So there's always going to be people moving in and out, it looks like. So thank you very much for being here. Angie and Steve, both local realtors, both have the MRP designation, and we thank you for your expertise and for serving these service members.
Thank you for having us.
It's been a pleasure.
Illinois Realtors is your one-stop solution for real estate education, whether you're looking to get into the business for the first time or whether you are a seasoned professional needing CE. The association's licensing and training center has all sorts of options available for you, including online options, which means you can take the coursework you need literally in your pajamas. Really, no one will ever know. Contact the training center today at 217-529-2600 or check us out online at illinoisrealtors.org/education. Welcome back to the Illinois Realtors Podcast. I'm John Broadbooks with Illinois Realtors, and we're coming to you from the Association's Conference and Expo in Collinsville, Illinois. You know, Illinois Realtors has a network of local government affairs directors who work with members, the public, and policymakers to protect and enhance private property rights statewide. It's a really big job. And that's because Illinois has more units of government than any other state in the nation. That means there are more opportunities for governments to pass rules which infringe on private property rights. And one area where this comes sharply into focus is with so-called crime-free ordinances. Joining us today are Ron Diedrich, Local Government Affairs Director for Illinois Realtors, who works with associations throughout the southern part of the state. And we have Doug Hartman, Jr., who has worked closely with his local and state association on private property rights issues for many years now. Welcome, Ron and Doug. So, Ron, let me start with you. What are the basics of a crime-free ordinance, and where have we seen them become an issue in southern Illinois?
Thanks, John. So the premise of crime-free housing is that it started in the early and mid-90s in Mesa, Arizona, and spread throughout the Southwest to the Midwest. And more recently, we have seen a number of municipalities, especially in Madison County, that started to enact crime-free housing ordinances. Crime-free housing is not a new program in Illinois. It's throughout the suburbs and through northern and central Illinois, but more specifically, a number of the programs in southwestern Illinois, more specifically Metro East, they've been in place 5, 6, 7, 8 years. But we've seen this recent rebirth as a result of some of the crime problems that have came across the river from northern parts of St. Louis County and St. Louis. And as a result, a number of municipalities are trying to crack down on those things. And so crime-free, in essence, it almost kind of feels like a marketing scam, because who is pro-crime? We all want safe streets, safe neighborhoods.
You're not pro-crime?
No, I'm not pro-crime. But oftentimes I'm portrayed as being pro-crime whenever I walk into a city hall to advocate on behalf of members of Greater Gateway Association of Realtors and Realtors Association of Southwestern Illinois. But with that in mind, our primary concern is on the property rights of our members, of landlords, but more specifically, we're concerned about the property and privacy rights of the tenants that reside in those. And oftentimes, crime-free housing inspections programs run afoul with basic tenets that are in the Bill of Rights and Illinois State Constitution.
Doug, there are a number of issues with these ordinances, as Ron points out, but among the biggest challenges is that many of them are crafted in such a way that they pretty severely limit due process for property owners. Isn't that correct?
Yes, it is. Thanks, John. Appreciate the question. There's a couple different scenarios. One I'll touch on is, you've got a guest that comes over, visiting somebody that lives in the building. They're maybe with a friend. Maybe the tenant doesn't actually know the person. They commit a crime. They get in a fight. They steal something. Something happens. The tenant doesn't know this person. They were a guest. They were there visiting. Well, in some of these municipalities, and fortunate enough that the ones I work in, we haven't had this happen, but the way some of these are written, the police can write a letter to the landowner and say, you have to evict them. There's not an opportunity for, and which is against the tenant as well, there's not an opportunity for them to say, hey, we did nothing wrong, we weren't a part of this, we're not responsible for that other person's actions and such. So then that landlord is forced, or that property owner is forced to, go and start an eviction process against somebody that might be a model tenant. They might be, take good care of the property. They might pay on time. The landowner might have no instance at all where they want to evict them, but they're being told by the government that they have to, which presents a pretty big problem.
Ron, I know we had a conversation a while back, and one of the issues is that there are state and federal laws which you really can run up against if you poorly craft one of these ordinances.
Yeah, and we've dealt with that in our negotiations last year with the larger municipality in Madison County. I successfully had a legal opinion that came from our in-house counsels, which kind of spelled out some of the flaws with some landlord licensure programs and crime-free addendas. And a number of those concerns were originally heard, but you have a lot of instances where a municipality, again, in the pursuit of being crime-free, is just quite frankly going to do what they want to. Consequences be darned. And it's unfortunate because, again, it goes back to those basic tenets that are in the U.S. and Illinois constitutions, which are often trampled by some of these things. And whenever we look at you know, a couple proposals that are in Springfield that would limit some of these searches. We really need to have that due process. We really need to have these municipalities go and get a traditional search warrant for some of these crime-free provisions. Because what in essence is happening is a commingling of a bureaucratic function, which our members deal with on a day-to-day basis, whether that be through the rental process or the transactional home inspection process by a municipality, and law enforcement. Whenever you dial 911, you do not want building and zoning to show up. Just the same time, our members, whenever they're engaging in rental practices or traditional home transactions, they don't want gun, badge, and body armor to show up at that process.
That seems a lot for a private property rights issue, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. Now, Doug, as a follow-up, to be clear, nobody wants a crime-infested property.
No,
and,
absolutely
and
not.
We're not telling local municipalities that you can't take steps to try to address crime in your community. But property owners do have rights, as Ron pointed out, and there should be some control over their investment. How do you strike a balance between property rights and the need for a municipality to address those needs to fight crime?
I think it starts with communication. There's definitely, whether some of these ordinances need to be rewritten and get some of those bad provisions out, that's one thing. But once the programs are in place, there has to be open communication between the landlords, the property owners, the tenants, and the police. Like I said, I'm very fortunate that here in Collinsville, we've got an excellent relationship with the Council PD. They've got our direct lines. There's often times where, hey, this person isn't on your lease, but it's a bad person. They're doing bad things. You might want to keep an eye on that building. And that stuff we had long before 2010 when Crime Free got started here in Collinsville. And, you know, hopefully we can continue that relationship. But some of these other municipalities that are just way out there on the things they're requiring are just unrealistic. So once these programs do get going, they have to look at what is good for the actual community. Everybody wants a crime-free area. That sounds awesome. Like you said, it's a marketing thing. Everybody wants to live in a crime-free area. Working together and keeping the lines of communication open is the only way you're going to better that.
So, Ron, if you were going to draw up a crime-free ordinance, what are sort of the essential elements that a municipality should consider when they're doing this?
Voluntary. That's a primary thing right there. So,
and by voluntary, you mean?
Well, I'll give an example. So the village of Swansea back in late 2018 installed a voluntary crime-free housing provision. A lot of the language was modeled after Belleville's program, which Belleville is a home rule unit of government and has had their programming in place since, I believe, 2012 or 2013. But their primary concern, Swansea not being a home rule unit of government, they're limited in terms of some of the things that they can do. So first off, I believe maybe their occupancy permit fees may have been $50. So if landlords volunteered to enter the program, then they went through the crime-free programming class, which was offered by the village. And, you know, as Doug was sitting next to me, you know, their firm has a number of rentals across a number of communities. So if Doug had already done, you know, crime-free programming in insert whatever municipality, likely Doug would be able to present that certificate from that municipality and say, hey, I've already done my crime-free class, my programming. So they'd say, okay, Doug, you're entered in the program. So whenever Doug goes to do that first showing, that first lease with the occupancy permit and that thing, and those processes, so that $50 fee maybe got dropped to $25. And again, it was, most importantly, one, it was voluntary, but secondly, it was incentive-based. It was not punitive, as we're seeing with some of this rebirth of crime-free provisions throughout northern Madison County. But to that end, we want to be community partners. We want to as Doug said a few minutes ago, we want clean communities, want crime-free communities, but at the same time, we want these processes to be done correctly and within the confines of state and federal statutes, and most importantly, under the auspices of, you know, the constitutions. And so we'll work with that municipality on whatever provision they want. Another key thing that we'd like to see in these is transparency. And, you know, hats off to the city of Belleville, because a number of years ago, my predecessor, GJR CEO Kyle Anderson, was able to negotiate a transparency provision in there that called for a crime-free housing committee to meet every 6 months. That crime-free housing committee is made up of landlords, tenants, city staff, aldermen, core constituencies that are involved in the rental business. And so they get together every 6 months. They review the revenues, the police call-outs, any other statistics that are associated with this. It provides transparency. And unfortunately, there's some of these municipalities that are considering crime-free, which will not even entertain the thought, the notion of a crime-free housing committee.
You know, it's interesting. So really, it comes down to three essential things, is what I'm hearing both of you say. And that is transparency in the process for property owners, elements of due process, and then really, I think you hit on communication. You know, if that's sort of the three legs here of the stool that you have to have for that. Is that accurate?
I would agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's an aspiration for a community to be as crime-free as possible. And you get a lot of these municipalities that seem to sort of rush into this. What is your best advice for a community that's looking for, that really wants to try to come up with something to look at private property and how they can control crime?
Meet with the Rons out there that'll talk to them and tell them the pros and the cons and what's worked and what's not worked, so that when they do implement it, it's a lot smoother than some of these other programs that have failed.
Well, thank you, Ron and Doug. I really appreciate you stopping by the Expo today. We're coming to you live from the Spring Conference and Expo here in scenic Collinsville at the Gateway Center. And Ron and Doug have been talking about crime-free ordinances. And thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, John.
The Illinois Realtors cares about property owners and the people who rely on them. That's why we have a team of advocates, and you heard from one of them, Ron Diedrich, just a second ago. And these advocates work statewide on issues ranging from crime-free ordinances to home rule to rent control. Illinois Realtors has more than 50,000 members, and our government affairs staff works on issues at the local, state, and national levels. To learn more about the association's advocacy, please go to illinoisrealtors.org today. Thanks for listening.